Hubert Humphrey, a graduate of the University of Minnesota.
Thank you very much, Governor. Reverend clergy and Governor Rolvaag, President Wilson and my colleague in the Congress, since I am the presiding officer of the Senate, I can still claim some relationship with the Congress, Congressman Carth, Dr. Shepard, and our guest from NASA, Dr. Newell. And I'm so pleased to see our new Undersecretary of the Treasury here from Minnesota, Fred Deming. Wonderful to have you, Fred. We're proud of you. Members of the faculty of this great university and visiting presidents of colleges and faculty. And Carl, our governor, I should say in more formal terms, I'm so pleased to see the fine representation here that you introduced from the state legislature of the state of Minnesota. When legislators and a governor take an interest in their university, in their colleges, in their school system, that's the best news that a state can have. And I can think of nothing that will do this great state of Minnesota more good in terms of its image, using contemporary vernacular, in terms of its reputation, than a fine educational system. And I intend to say just a few words about that this evening. President Wilson, we're very proud of you and your administration. You are privileged to be the president of one of the truly great universities of the world. I want to impress that upon my fellow Minnesotans, because we have a tendency out here to take things for granted. We need just a little bit more of the sparkle of life, may I say, even the fiction and the drama of life, so that we can announce to the world what we have. This tremendous educational system of this state, not just the university. The university is its climax, its star, but the private colleges, the public colleges, the elementary and the secondary and the vocational schools and the community colleges or the junior colleges, and then our university. This is the real wealth of this state. This is its real greatness. And don't you ever forget it. I can honestly say that every dollar that is put into a school system, every dollar that can be made available through private or public sources for a elementary, secondary, junior, community college and university, every dollar is the wisest investment that you will ever make. I only wish that this room tonight were filled with the financiers of America, with the chief and leading industrialists. Many of them are here. But I wish they could all be here, because I would like to have them see this brochure that is here on our table about our university. I'd like to have them heard the message of the governor of this state. I guess what I'm trying to say to you is there are acres of diamonds under our feet. As an author by the name of Bellamy once said, and we don't need to just look far away. It's right here, and we should care for it. We should develop it. And any man that wants a future in business, or any person that wants a future in commerce or industry or finance, that man should be the champion of education. Because without it, there is no future. The competition of tomorrow is brain competition. Not muscle, know-how. The strength of this nation today is in its brain power, its intellectual power, coupled with its spiritual commitment and spiritual power. And if we miss that lesson, then we have missed the full meaning of civilization. So before I say another word even about this glorious event that means so much to our state, these tangible evidences of development, such as a laboratory or two more floors on a physics building, let me just say to my friends of the legislature, you ought to write a chapter in history for yourself. Not that you penny-pinched on education, but rather that you went out and led a crusade for it. That's what will make you your name. That's for what your children will honor you. And it's for that that your state will remember you. Those that deny a state the opportunity to grow intellectually are unworthy of the respect of a state. Those that contribute to the development of a state will be its heroes. And I appeal tonight to my fellow public servants. This is the time to invest. Business is investing. Why shouldn't we invest in the public sector in this great area of education? Well, Mr. Governor, you told the folks what they could have here if they just move. We've made great progress already, and we're going to make more. 114th anniversary. That doesn't make us very old. This is a very young society. But I must say that I will always be grateful for the privilege that has been mine to have had an education, at least to have received a diploma. And I think I got some education. They had to work on me a little here, but from this great university. I like to come back to this university because I feel a continuing debt that can never be repaid. And I hope that you feel that way too. So my respect and affection for this great institution is literally unbounded and unlimited. This is an intellectual center. And this has made this state of ours respected. We're known throughout America not only for our lakes and our land, not only for our commerce, but for our theater, for our music, for our art, for our intellectuals. We're known for our industry and our commerce, our scientists. But above all, I think we're known just for our quality of our people. And what a wonderful resource that is. You can't replace it. The only thing that you can do is to grace it, to develop it, to emancipate it. And that's what we're trying to do here this evening and in each and every one of these days of the development of our educational structure. I remember, Carl, my dear governor, the float at the inaugural parade from Minnesota. I remember that it was not the flashiest, not the gaudiest, but that it put emphasis upon the brain power, the intellectual power of Minnesota, management, skill and labor, professional talent, the cooperation, the teamwork of government and industry and university and labor and agriculture, all working together. I think it was one of the very best floats in the parade. And then when you couple that, President Wilson, with the university marching band, I had the proudest day of my life. I'll tell you, that was really something. I practically wrenched the arm off the President of the United States, pointing all the time out there, and he kept saying, "Is that from Texas?" And I said, "Not on your life. That's from the University of Minnesota." Just a few days ago, I believe it was Monday of this week, Mrs. Humphrey and I were at Cape Kennedy in Florida. My friend Joe Karth has been there, I know, a half a dozen times, but I've just recently become chairman of the Space Council. You know, vice presidents do not have too many legislative or executive responsibilities. The responsibilities that you have are the ones that are given to you by the president. As I've said somewhat facetiously, but really in truth, whatever I am or I ever hope to be, I owe to the president. And that surely is true. Those of you that listen to certain radio programs and television shows in August know that, and later on. But there are some duties that are prescribed by legislation. And one of those duties was in the Space Act of 1958, the one that has been referred to by Dr. Newell. And that was the establishment of the Space Council, which is a body in the government that coordinates the activities of this government in the field of aeronautics and space science. Department of Defense, NASA, Atomic Energy Commission, the different agencies of our government that are involved in scientific endeavor that relates to space development. The Vice President has as his duty the chairman of that council. Now, I do not claim any expertise in this. I am just learning. I'm an eager student going back to school. I've been reading pamphlets and books and all sorts of brochures and tables and documents about our space activities. I thought I knew something about it as a member of Congress, but I never had the chance, like Congressman Carth, to serve on the Space Committee. And now we have Senator Mondale. I want you to know, my good friends, that we have a little power in both houses of the Congress. And senior member is Congressman Carth, now with our new United States Senator, Senator Mondale, and your Vice President. We intend to keep a very friendly eye upon this space program and to see to it that it moves ahead for the entire nation. But this is an amazing and fascinating subject matter. It's the sort of thing that our children become excited about, even if we sometimes sort of miss it, because they're living in an entirely new age, and they're going to realize more and more as they grow a little older how important it was that their parents provided the means to make this program the best in the world. So make it your business as a citizen and as a taxpayer to see to it that what Congressman Carth told you tonight, namely that in some areas we are not first but second, that we overcome that gap, that we close it. Because I don't happen to believe that the United States of America, with its wealth, with its know-how, with its gross national product, with all of its assets, ought to be second at anything. I've been in too many races that are two men races coming in second. That's last. And I have a little success formula for you. If you get in a two-man race, make sure you come in first. And essentially in the space race right now, it's a two-nation race, even though many other nations make a great contribution, and we work with those nations. In fact, we have tremendous international cooperation in this endeavor. But there are two major powers, and this American will not be satisfied in his lifetime until the United States of America is first in space and aeronautics. First in science and technology and engineering, as well as in many other endeavors of humankind. Well, Jerry Shepard has told us a good deal this evening, as have others, about the tremendous contributions of this university to science. And I had the chance earlier at a reception to meet some of these illustrious scientists. I always stand in awe when I meet them. I travel by plane a good deal, and once in a while, I'd be seated alongside of some bright-looking young man about 28, 30, 35 years of age, and they talk a language that we ordinary people just don't understand. They're the people in the field of computers and electronics, and they're the physicists, and oh, what they are, I don't know. All I know is they have peculiar-looking charts and all kinds of diagrams and tables, and they talk to each other like they're from another world, and in a sense, they are. They're working in another world, working in this world to explore another world. And Minnesota has given a goodly number of these scientists. Some are here with us this evening. Time does not permit us to select each and every one. But I'm sure you won't forget that it was Professor Al Near who separated the isotope. It was his isotope separation work on U-235. Before World War II. And you will recall that there were very great contributions made to the whole subject of atomic energy, and particularly to the Atomic Energy Commission, by Dr. John Williams of this university. first as the Director of Research, and then as a Commissioner of the AEC. And in recent years, there has been very productive research that has been achieved here on this campus, not only by Professors Neer and Williams, but by Nye and Winkler and a host of others. Oh, we have every right to sort of stand erect and feel just a little taller. Now, with this new addition to the physics building, just some tangible evidence of the developments here in the field of science, we're assured that there will be continued excellence in space physics research, because the most modern facilities are going to be provided. And this research will be under the most capable and able direction of scientists that have already established a national and international reputation. So with more adequate facilities and top-grade scientists, we're on the march. I must say, Dr. Wilson, that you can feel very proud of something else, and the people in this state are not only people of vision and people that like or respect excellence, but they also have a respect for frugality. As you may recall, the physics building was funded in April of 1963 by NASA through a facilities grant in the amount of approximately $704,000. But I want my good friends here to note this, and this is a report right from NASA. Due in part to the careful design, the favorable bids, and prudent management, the actual costs will be considerably less than this amount. Now, that's quite a record. I've been around the government a long time, and it's seldom that I hear a report that when you extend a grant that there was a little left over. I want to compliment you. That's another achievement, may I say, that goes far beyond science. I'm often asked whether our space effort is really worth the cost. And my answer is an unequivocal yes. It isn't only yes here tonight. I voted for space funds in the Congress. In fact, had the government of the United States bestirred itself a little earlier, we wouldn't be second, would we, Joe? We didn't get started on much of this effort until others had already moved far out in front. The present President of the United States is the author of the Space Act. He is its daddy, so to speak. And how fortunate it is to have as a president someone who really considers his crowning achievement of a long public career to be the passage of the Space and Aeronautics Act, or Astronomics Act. This is a wonderful, wonderful legislative accomplishment. And now, as you've noted even in your morning's press, the President of the United States takes time out of his very busy day to visit the headquarters of the space agency, to visit with the scientists. He keeps up to date on it, and he asks his vice president, "What are you doing about it?" He tells me, "Whenever you travel, Hubert, I want you to visit space installations. I want you to talk to the scientists. I want you to find out what more we ought to be doing." I go back to what I said. Is it worth it? Yes. And I said to Dr. Wilson tonight that when I served as majority whip in the United States Senate, many is the time that I had to twist an arm or two almost out of the socket to make sure that we didn't have that budget cut to ribbons. I know that you can make a good talk about all the work that there's to be done on Earth, and I'm for that. But let me say very frankly that this great America can afford to do what needs to be done on Earth and in the stars, too. We cannot make the choices of one or the other. We need to do it. We need to do both. And we have not overexpended. It has not been wasteful, unless you feel that every experiment that doesn't produce a miracle is wasteful. Science has a risk in it. The cost of science cannot be measured. You can do research on a project for years and never achieve a result, and then a breakthrough, just as we're doing it today in cancer. And just as we're pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into research on heart disease and strokes and neurological disturbances. We don't find all the answers quickly, but we will unless we quit. So I say the cost is not too high. If I have any complaint, is that we haven't done enough. What do we realize from these expenditures? Well, first of all, there's the quest for increased knowledge of our own universe. And we ought to know about this universe. And we're penetrating it now. We're getting away from the magnetic pull of the Earth. We're getting out into the universe. This within itself is knowledge worthwhile. But there's some dollar figures that are quite important, too. And for those that seek to measure science in terms of dollars, let me just give you a few little suggestions as to what we're doing right here. This very building that we're talking about, the one that has been dedicated today, on the roof of this new addition, that roof will accommodate upper atmospheric research and storm observation studies. There will also be significant increase in the university's capability to work on the highly complex instruments scheduled for satellites, rocket probes, and balloons. Weather control and weather modifications, although at least a decade away, will in a large measure depend upon the continued research right at this university and the understanding of the underlying weather formation processes. With satellites extending man's vision, and that's really what it is, it's an extension of the eye and of the mind into new dimensions, improved weather forecasting will be a far-reaching economic benefit to everyone. Let me give you some estimates that the Weather Bureau just presented to the Congress. If we could just predict weather 5 days in advance with any degree of reliability, the savings would amount to $2.5 billion a year in agriculture alone. I think that's the best agricultural program we could get. I think Secretary Freeman would really appreciate having that one right now. It would mean an additional $45 million in the lumber industry. $100 million could be saved in surface transportation costs. $75 million in retail marketing. $3 billion in water resources management. And might I add that many a city that runs out of its snow removal fund and others could have some relief if you could predict or modify weather just a little bit. And we will, just a matter of when we get on with it. Now, these are some of the gains in just this one little limited sphere called weather, to which your and our present facilities and research can lead. But there's much more. I want to just recite some of that. The officers of this university and its faculty, and the leaders of industry here, and I was glad to see my old friend Jay Cameron Thompson come back from a vacation down in Mexico to be here tonight. He's given great leadership here in this community for research and development. Well, you've taken a great step forward to make Minnesota have a place in this space age. We want to participate, don't we? And we want to contribute to the solution of the nation's problems in this field. And we want our industries to be in the forefront of the new technologies which are being developed. We've already accomplished a great deal now through cooperation between business, university, and government. And that's the theme of this administration, if I may just get one little note in here. This business of pitting one group against another has no place in America. This idea that there has to be a class conflict, or labor against capital, or business against government, or local government against federal government, or federal government against state government, that's for demagogues, not for people that want to build an America. We need an America that works together. And men of reason, men of tolerance, they work to find out how we can work together, not how we can be separated. Not how we can be divided, but how we work together to build what? Well, the president says the great society. Call it what you will, to build a better country. And you don't build a better country by antagonisms or division. You build it by cooperation. And now, right here in our own great community, we have found out that American business, that Minnesota business, has a vital stake in the laboratory, in the classroom, and that these professors that for a long period of time were looked upon as if somehow or another they were starry-eyed, idealists, impractical souls, these are the most practical people in the world. Without them, there isn't any world. Without them, there is no future. And it's interesting to me to note that people who 20 years ago were talking about these professors as if they were the bane of all evil are now hiring them and taking them away from the university at much larger salaries, putting them in their business establishments, needing them. And why? Because knowledge, information, is the difference between success and failure. An example I want to give you of cooperation. A little over a year ago, when it was decided not to build the Midwestern University's Research Association Accelerator, and the scientists here know of what I speak, it's called the Mura Project, which was over to Stoughton, over in Wisconsin, we determined that the Midwest scientific community could participate more actively in the functioning of the Argonne National Laboratory of the Atomic Energy Commission in Chicago. Now, that participation would strengthen the laboratory as well as support and encourage the role of science in our Midwestern universities. And I'm happy to report tonight great progress. What looked like was going to be a lost opportunity because we couldn't get the money for this new and huge accelerator that was needed over in Wisconsin for this Mura project. We set out on another course, and with the approval of President Johnson, in fact, with an express directive from him, we had our first meetings in my office when I was senator. A committee consisting of the Associated Midwestern Universities, the University of Chicago, and the Argonne National Laboratory was established. Now, that committee has been chaired by Professor John Williams of this university. And its report was made available in October 1964, and it recommended a whole new setup, a new university-sponsored corporation. I just want to say that, to summarize this without going into all the names, of course, there was the president of the University of Chicago, Dr. Beadle, and Dr. Elvis Starr of Indiana, and Dean Bryce Crawford of the graduate school here, and he acted as president of this Associated Midwestern University group, a committee of three. They've been able to design now a program which I believe very shortly will go into effect that will permit administrators and scientists of Midwestern universities to work together towards a program that will strengthen scientific endeavor and that will provide very important university scientific programs. Here's where government and universities now work together. Now, I'm pleased to announce another significant aspect of the university federal agency cooperation. I've just been informed by Mr. Webb, and I had the letter here, I guess I've got it someplace, the administrator of NASA, that negotiations between this university and NASA have reached a point of agreement in principle where within a month or 6 weeks, NASA will be able to announce its support of the Space Sciences Center at this university at a level between $0.75 million annually. Extra money over and above what you have, over and above the $5 million which is already here. Mr. Webb told me, and I quote from his letter. This letter was delivered to my office this morning. This grant will provide, I quote from it, through the Space Sciences Center, additional opportunities within the university for the conduct of multidisciplinary research of vital interest to the National Aeronautics and Space Program, and will help bring into coherent pattern a number of research projects in the thermal and material sciences, in control and computer technology, in the biological sciences and space physics and astronomy. This is a very significant announcement. I'd hope that we might be able at this very night to to say that here it is, Dr. Wilson, but we have such things as procedures and budgets and panels, and all I can say to you is that you have this commitment that within a month or 6 weeks, a splendid new addition to the Space Sciences Center in terms of supporting funds for scientific endeavor will be made available to our great University of Minnesota. And secondly, Congressman Carth has told you about this $100,000 grant and the interest of NASA in the technical utilization program. And may I just say this, Joe, I'd hope that you might just emphasize it a little more. I want to say to my business friends out here, I get around this country a great deal, and I intend to travel in every state in this nation during my term as vice president. And I find the business leaders in other areas just literally on the move. They're putting up their matching funds. Now here's a $100,000 grant. Don't you trim it too much in terms of your contribution. For every dollar that you put into this program, there'll be more to come. Matching funds. The private industrial sector of this community, of this state, has a tremendous stake in this. Don't rely upon your government to do it alone for you. You know that isn't going to happen, and you don't want it to happen. Just do a little bit more than you planned on. That's the purpose of this meeting. Sort of like going to church. If you only were going to contribute as much as you planned on, you might have stayed home. You really ought to do just a little more. Now let me repeat what Mr. Webb said in that letter to Congressman Carth. The university will undertake in an energetic and organized manner to create a broadly based multidisciplinary team to explore mechanisms whereby the progress and research results achieved in space science and technology may be fed into the industries and segments of the economy with which the university normally has close relations. This is what we call, for lack of a better phrase, spin-off. This research is not carried on just to fill up notebooks. It isn't the private preserve of just scientists. It's to be used. And the difference between a growing progressive community and one that is dying on the vine is what you use out of the knowledge that you attain or obtain. So I urge upon you to put yourself to the task of a little extra effort, and I want to promise you if you do that, I'll help you to the best of my ability. Mr. Webb has also written to me, and now I know Dr. Wilson will like this. As you know, there has been a clearly manifest need for additional facilities, speaking now of our university, to provide working space for aeronautical and space research over and above that being made available in the new wing of the physics building, which is being dedicated today. The university, our university, has filed a request, but it has not been possible to process the application in the period since it was received. However, we will give it the most careful consideration and believe that we can act favorably on some part of it within this fiscal year. End of quote. Good news. Now, Joe, we've got to make sure that they don't cut that appropriation too much over there. Now, you're in the Congress. I hold you accountable. What Mr. Webb is saying is that we're going to move ahead here with additional facilities to truly make this Space Sciences Center the finest in all of the Midwest. And we are going to do this just as quickly as the funds are made available. And even as of yesterday, the director of the agency was testifying before the committees of Congress to get those funds. And by the way, I worked on that budget. I had a little something to say about the space budget. The president's had us working on budgets a good deal. And it's a tight budget, a hard budget. There's no fat in it, and there's no waste in it. And I only hope that we'll get every dollar of it. In fact, I'd be very frank with you. I thought we ought to have had a little bit more, because I believe that the money is being extraordinarily well administered and managed. Well, now these three items are going to provide the University of Minnesota with unequal potential for participation in our space and science programs. And there will be new opportunities here for even greater cooperation with industry and the university. Now, finally, let me say that the president has interested is interested in having this nation benefit from the great capabilities of our Midwestern industries and universities. I wonder if you know that the President sent a special letter to the Director of the Budget, asking the Director of the Budget to place emphasis upon greater research and development in the Midwest. We want to have this America balanced. It doesn't mean that there shall be less for the East or the West or the South. It means that we will do more with these great universities that make up the heartland of America. And your congressmen and your senators, regardless of party, are looking into this matter carefully, and I might add that I was born in the Midwest and live here. The President knows that from the closer relationships between our Midwestern industries and universities and the scientists and engineers, there can come great benefits to this nation. He has already taken steps on this Argonne National Laboratory, and there will be more to come. Now, as I've looked deeper and deeper into the problems of the space age, I am more than ever convinced that human intellect now has the new tools to work with. But learning to use these tools, these new powers, requires the greatest imagination and the most efficient use of the new quantities of information now accumulating at such a dizzy pace. Our big problem today is to collate this information, to make it usable, to be able to retrieve it, to make it usable for our industries and our universities on a moment's notice. Nothing is more important than to stimulate the broadest intellectual activity, creative work that crosses the lines that have historically divided mathematics and physics and chemistry and biology and history and philosophy. These are all parts of the great spectrum of knowledge. And now we're bringing them together in a coordinated, integrated effort. Our Space Sciences Center is going to provide one of the most important opportunities in this nation for the work that is needed by such men as Dr. Newell here of NASA. This is also needed by the National Science Foundation, the Atomic Energy Commission, the Defense Department, the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, and other institutions of our government. The challenge to us in Minnesota and in the Midwest is to make our institutions so useful that they can provide focus so that we can attract our ablest scholars to be here and to think about the most complex problems in real time. Let me simplify that sentence. We're in a competitive society. Your president of your university knows so. And my fellow Minnesotans, unless we are first rate, unless we are out there to do the best that can be done, some other person will get the assistance. This is a highly competitive society. And the universities and the scientific institutes are competing for these government dollars. And I come home here to my fellow Minnesotans and say, look, take nothing for granted. There isn't any political influence that anybody can exercise in this field. If there is, there shouldn't be. This is science we're talking about. The only way that a great university is going to receive its fair share of the research dollar from its government is to be prepared to use it. And this means competence. This means scholarship. This means cooperation between community and university, cooperation between industry and university, frontline, always top grade performance. Well, is it all worth it? I think so. Space sciences. I think we'll mark the states of the future by those that expand in this area. Space sciences is space exploration. And there's a whole new world of exploration. You'll be able to tell what is going to happen in certain sections of this America by tracing down the dollar that is spent on research and development. It may be costly, but it's more costly not to do it. And I might add, just on a practical note, that the total effort that's being made by your government in space science is less than 1% of the gross national product. And my fellow Americans, if we fail in this effort, our gross national product will be meaningless. We can't afford to fail in their defense, in our foreign policy, in our domestic economy, or in the development of our science and technology. This is the age of excellence. Mediocrity was for another age. Getting by was for another age. We must bring up our youth. We ourselves must understand that you can settle for nothing less than excellence. That's why I guess the astronauts use that phrase, A-OK. Anybody can do OK. It's as common as the language of the street. How are you doing? OK. The worst one in town can say that. The most ill-informed can answer OK. But it takes someone of competence, of dedication, of high standards, of excellence in performance to really be able to say A-OK. And Mr. President, I want our great university to have from its mast that flag of excellence, that E for excellence, for achievement. And it can be said of every Minnesotan that he comes from a state in which they settle for nothing less than the best. Thank you very much.